Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Que Golazo, USA versus Mexico recap, presented to you by Sonos Beam, the premium smart soundbar for TV, movies, games, music, and more. So stay tuned for additional details about the Sonos Beam later in today's show. Dos a cero. Pulisic is back on the field and back on the score sheet. Further vindication for Weston McKennie and a hat trick of victories for the U.S. men's national team over Mexico in the calendar year. Que Golazo begins right now. Hey, everyone. Welcome to Que Golazo. Before we get into the recap, we've got an important announcement to make. We've got a $100 gift card for a Paramount Plus subscription to give one lucky viewer.
Wow.
Yep, that's right, Jimmy. Hold on. To give it away, though, we need your help. The powers that be have set a benchmark of 150 likes during this live cast. So you know what to do. Start smashing that like button. And it's simple. If we reach that number, 150, we'll raffle away the prize. So if you want to be in with a chance of watching CONCACAF World Cup qualifiers, UEFA Champions League, Serie A, NWSL, and loads of other elite soccer competitions for free, as well as tons of movies, shows, and other sports, then drop your Twitter or IG handle into the chat and our producer will pick one name at random and contact the lucky winner about delivery details. We will announce the winner in Sunday's Jamaica versus USA preview podcast/video. So remember, though, if we don't get to 150 likes, the $100 stays here and we'll have to do it another time. So make sure you hit that like button and don't go anywhere. Jimmy Conrad, what is going on, my man?
Sorry, I'm just on YouTube right now smashing that like button so I can win a $100 gift card, everybody. You know what? I'm absolutely buzzing because dos a cero. And you know what? It actually validates the tough decisions that I think Greg Berhalter had to make. Who is he going to start at goalkeeper? He went with Zach Steffen. Zach Steffen was immense, making some big, big saves. I think if you're going to win a game or any kind of competition of consequence, you got to have a hot goalkeeper. Zach Steffen stepped up and was the guy. And I think maybe he's edged into number one status over Matt Turner currently. But outside of that, the John Anthony Brooks decision, that was very controversial to leave John Anthony Brooks with all of his experience at home, not even in bringing him in. And then, much to probably the disdain for all the Euro snobs out there, starting two MLS center backs, Heath Pierce. And guess what? They got a clean
MLS-y.
Sheet.
Yep.
A clean sheet against one of the best front threes in all of CONCACAF. Chucky Lozano, Raul Jimenez, and Tecatito. Yes, they had a couple chances. Chucky should have maybe finished his chance. XFM made a good save. Tecatito whiffed on his, but that's not what everybody remembers at the end of the day. We got a clean sheet, and I'm here for it. And I thought the rest of the team, as you say, Heath, and we've talked about this before, if you're going to win a game of consequence, you got to have a lot of players playing at like a 7 or 8 level out of 10. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of players at that 7 or 8 level tonight, and that's why we got the result.
Yeah, outside of a Zach Steffen, I can't really think of anybody who was pushing on the 10, but collectively, we saw in the first half, and you know, I think we judge this team of first half and second half, obviously, because they're always, it's the bipolarity of that is insane. But we look at that, and the team put out, I thought the fight was really good. There was a few moments, that, and one of the chances that Mexico had in the first half was an unbelievable build-up play, right? Chucky, one touches it into I'm blanking on all the names because they lost to the U.S. 2-0. But whips one in. They play 1, 2, 3 touches, and now they're on a breakaway. There's a couple other ones. That was a bad turnover by Tyler Adams. There was a few of these moments, right? But I don't ever remember, Jimmy, and you tell me your take on playing against Mexico and the times that you played against them. Was there ever a game where you didn't give up chances to Mexico where your goalie didn't have to make a save or some sort of stand-on-your-head type of defensive play or things like that? Because I can't remember any of those or any game, even against big competition where you didn't have to get a little bit of luck your way or somebody didn't have to make a big play to keep you in the game.
What's funny is when I don't do this often, I'm sure you're like, yeah, sure, Jimmy, of course you do. But when I go back and watch the Dos a Cero I was part of where I was man of the match, I look back on it, I'm like, God, we actually gave up.
Is that the one you scored? You didn't score in the Dosisero.
I did. I scored in the Dosisero.
Oh, you did?
I did. Thanks for bringing that up. Can we roll that clip? Anyway, everybody's seen the clip. It's already brainwashed. I've got everybody properly brainwashed. What I'll say in that one, when I do watch it back, though, we gave up a ton of chances. Tim Howard did make some unbelievable saves, or Mexico didn't have that composure, that class that they needed in front of goal, and that result could have been much, much different. And I think that's what burns Mexican fans and the Mexican players a lot, is that they didn't deserve to lose 2-0 in the game that I played in the Dosisero. And maybe in this one, 2-0 wasn't a fair result
either.
Same
for me, by the way.
But it seems to happen that way. It's crazy. Yeah, talk to me about your experience, because that game that I played in the Dosisero easily could have been 2-2.
I tell this story, and I've told it a million times. So if you're a regular with Jimmy and I, we're sorry. We've got, you know, I always go back to the James Gandolfini quote where he says in what's the show?
The Sopranos.
Sopranos. Jeez Louise, my brain's fried from this game.
Well, you're emotional.
You know, I remember when is the lowest form of communication. I'm like, dude, that's all I got. Why would a guy say something like that? And it makes me insecure thinking about it. But in my Dosisero, again, there was a moment in the first minute, and Tim Howard has to sort of stay close on his body. Dos Santos gets a goal. Giovanni Dos Santos gets a goal scoring opportunity on his left foot, driving in and makes the save. And then from that moment, things started to get better. And they didn't have a ton of chances from there, but Rafa Marquez got sent off. Michael Bradley had a brace that game. One of them was a bad goalkeeper error. You know, it was just a number of things that happened where you go, oh, when I play that back, and the way that we grew up playing the game, you're like, well, we didn't have possession much, and they sort of controlled the flow of the game, but it's 2-0 feels a little bit unfair, but you kind of take it, right? In the U.S., I think in the second half, we're a very different team in the first half, but Mexico scores 2 out of 3 of those, or even one of those. It's different. Now, Jimmy, let's talk a little bit about Pulisic, and then we'll get to the back line. You were very much about, or at least had him not in your starting lineup. And
that's right.
I had him in where I was like, dude, 60, we got to get him in. You can always take him out. You can put Brendan Aaronson or Timo Weah. And you had a different vision for that. And you had Timo Weah almost propped up very early on, more than I would have when I looked at him and sort of his inconsistencies of performances in the national team. Kind of tell me about Pulisic, Timo Weah, why you kind of came up with that. And then obviously on CBS Sports HQ, you had predicted that Pulisic is going to come on and score. Again, not a huge prediction, but it does when it actually happens. It's a nice feeling.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate that lead-in, Heath Pierce. What I saw with Christian Pulisic is I thought through the conversation that Greg Berhalter most likely had with Thomas Tuchel at Chelsea, and the fact that he does have a tag of being injury prone, and can this time at least, can everybody work together and row the boat in the same direction to make sure that we bring him back properly. And I think Thomas Tuchel, I don't know how much he studies the U.S. men's national team, but could look at the team and say, you have players that can step up and play. You've already had success without Christian in the team. Can you just roll out those guys to start and then maybe bring Christian on as a super sub like we have been in these last couple games before the international break? And I think that maybe was a conversation to have. And maybe the compromise from Greg is, well, 4 days after that, we have a game in Jamaica. We'd love to start him in that one. Are you okay with that?
Okay, let me ask you this on that note. Does it change for you now that the U.S. beat Mexico? We're sitting on 14 points, right? We know that there's 3 points. We know that there is 3 points out there against Jamaica. I truly believe that we should be going there to get 3 points, knowing what we know now and the performances of the team. But do you change your mind now knowing that, well, we don't need him as much? We still need him, but do we need him to have a bigger role than he had tonight in terms of building him back up into the player that we want for the next 6-8 months, and considering he is injury prone?
By the way,
Todd says Pulisic should come off the bench in the next match.
You mentioned that on HQ. To give you some love on HQ, you also agreed with Todd and said that Pulisic should come off the bench the next match. I think that the benefit of this particular qualifying window is that we only have 2 games in that same 7 or 8 days, as opposed to the previous windows where we had to play 3 games in a week or 8 days. That's crazy. So we don't have to rotate as much. So to your point, I think we have the luxury of rolling out a good core of players to be the same. And that could include Christian Pulisic coming off the bench. Brendan Aaronson, maybe a little bit quieter in this one. I think Mexico is craftily good at defending and probably don't get the credit they deserve. And yes, they didn't make the plays that ultimately to make the difference to win the game tonight. And I'm okay with that. But Brendan Aaronson maybe didn't have as much influence, but he pops up in spots. I remember him being kind of quiet in the Canada game. And then all of a sudden he counter presses, wins the ball off a throw in, and that leads to us breaking and him finishing it off to get the goal against Canada. So he has those moments because he's tireless. He's got an engine on him where he's still always poking and prodding to make something happen. His head doesn't go down. So there could, you could easily convince me why Aaronson should start and Weah as well. The reason I said Weah getting the nod over, you know, Areola or anybody else at that side was because I think you want to build what I know about Greg Berhalter. You want to give these guys the belief that, hey, you scored in the last game against Costa Rica. Was it the cleanest goal ever? Was Keylor Navas on in? Whatever. But you go back to him. And when you go back to him, you might get another version of Timothy Weah that you hadn't seen before because he knows the coach has his back. And I think we saw that tonight. So we can get into him a little bit later. But with regard to Christian Pulisic, he has that clutch gene. I think Weston McKennie has it well, where they step up and they want to make
it's a good
big
shout.
Plays. And Pulisic, to his credit, was doing something that I didn't really see a lot from Aaronson. When the ball went wide, there was a commitment in the box. And I think there was some tactical change at halftime where we didn't commit with those same types of numbers in the first half. And maybe because we weren't holding the ball up the same or whatever it may be, but the balance and the communication of the team felt better. And we tried to isolate certain players in 1v1 situations. And we got a lot of crosses in. And there was a commitment to get there. And I think maybe they identified, or maybe Christian identified by himself. I don't want to take any credit away from him. Just get inside the box, run with a commitment, and see what happens. And for him to get across one of the center backs to get a header, to unlock everything and score, is really tremendous. And I just really think it speaks to his ability to be a difference maker. And that's something that, even though we have guys that can do the job, Christian Pulisic still has that little X factor difference maker that we need. So yeah, to your point, we want him to stay as healthy for as long as possible.
Well, Johnny says Aaronson is a stud, but his delivery on set pieces needs improvement. I think it's a fair critique of Brendan Aaronson tonight that you had. And we can't expect him to have that game every game. You know, we used to talk about it. Let's use Landon Donovan as an example, right? Clutch gene. Would you agree?
Yes.
But Landon Donovan wasn't around in long portions of a lot of games. But when it came time to deliver for his team, even if he was having an average or a subpar match or an okay match or a 7-8 or a 9, whatever, he would deliver. And I think that's what we see out of McKennie delivering in these big types of games. Like, what was that stat that came out? Something about 7 of his 8 goals or something have been game in actual real competitions for the U.S. 7 of Weston McKennie's 8 have come in official competitions. And that's a clutch gene, right? Mm-hmm, Christian Pulisic, mm-hmm. Same thing. And there's something about that game where we need to analyze or judge them differently because we know they have that X factor. Weston McKennie has that X factor. You don't get to Juventus at his age coming from Schalke unless somebody is able to recognize that X factor that you have. Jimmy, let's shift gears a little bit to the performance of this team.
Okay.
First half and second half. You know, we had a comment on here earlier that it looked like two different USA teams. We've seen that almost this entire World Cup qualifying campaign. I want to know, is this a positive or a negative for you? Because on one hand, I'm like, this is scary because you play against the best in the world, game's over by halftime. Having said that, the fighting spirit that you have to tap into as a team, as a group, that this team is going to benefit from in the long run, of being able to go into a locker room up against it, down goals, you know, playing poorly, giving up chances against Mexico in this game specifically, being behind against teams that you shouldn't be behind in, to claw their way back into these games. Costa Rica, Honduras, staying tight on El Salvador, bouncing back from Panama, even though they didn't bounce back, but they bounced back the next game. Beating Mexico in this context after not having a great first half. That, to me, there's something really powerful in that, but you don't want it to become a trend, at least in my book, where that's what you rely on, is that fighting spirit to keep you in the games of like, oh, we're never out of a match, because again, against the best in the world, you're done.
So what I'll say is, and I find this stat to be fascinating, that we've scored 11 goals so far in our 7 mm-hmm. games in World Cup qualifying, and 10 of those goals have been in the second half. The only other time that we had a first half goal was against Costa Rica, and that was an absolute banger from Sergiño Dest. If that's what we're trying to count on to score goals in the first half, yes, that's a problem. And I think you and I, we talk off camera about this a ton as well, and we probably should record us just talking off camera.
We
about
talk
this.
On like, camera, but
on camera, off
non recording.
It's nonstop that we talk about this type of stuff, and we just want to see more of the second half and the first half. We want to see this team become complete for 90 minutes, and we're getting closer to it. But we gave up some really good chances to Mexico in the first half. Two very clear cut. Thank God for Zach Steffen. You know, saves and maybe that presence for the whiff of Tecatito. Tecatito, by the way, becoming my favorite Mexican player of all time with that whiff, because that would have changed the game a lot. So it's interesting when you say performance. What I think I like about us is that at least we're capable of adapting to the situation. We're capable of adapting to, okay, this is being taken away from us. This is how we set out our tactics in the first half. It didn't work out. Now what are we going to do to rectify it? And it seems like we're rectifying it quite quickly. And on top of that, rectifying it in a way where we're actually turning half chances into full chances. Because I think we were just full of half chances in the first half in this particular game. Second half, we started to materialize. We started to pepper Memo Ochoa. We started to make Mexico suffer a little bit. And as I saw with one of the comments there, Mexico failed in their high press. And I think that actually speaks to the quality of players that we have in the team, including Zach Steffen, a goalkeeper. Zach Steffen threaded the needle like a 40-yard pass in the first half that split two lines from Mexico. I was like, what the hell is this guy, you know? And then on top of that, when he's making world-class saves, which is what we thought Matt Turner had over him, was these, you know, quick reaction saves. If he continues to play like that, it's going to be hard for Matt Turner to ever see the field for the U.S. Yeah. But I thought Zach Steffen was immense. And when you have that type of player in the back and also defenders that are comfortable under pressure, it makes a big difference. And then I want to give a shout out to our midfield as well, because we're only as good in transition as our midfield, right? As the cliche goes, you win games in midfield. And I thought tonight our guys were a little bit better and they wanted the ball in tough spots. I thought we were a little sloppy with our passing in the first half, just loose passing. And it wasn't even due to Mexico's pressure. It was just almost too casual and touches were a little bit too big and it led to some issues. We're almost putting ourselves in these bad situations. I think we cleaned that up in the second half. I think our communication was better. Our team balance was better. And I think we identified either the coaching staff or the players. Let's just get it to our guys wide and let them go 1v1 against some, I think, vulnerable Mexican defenders. I think we really identified some vulnerabilities in Mexico and we made them pay for it.
Yeah. Let me ask you this for this team. Is like, did you think they had a bad first half? Do you think the U.S. was poor in the first half?
Because
One of the things that I really liked was the swarm press was great. Like the energy was really, really high. I just feel like, again, that cohesiveness and that, you know, this goes back to how often we change our roster, how often we change our lineup, but that cohesiveness of that classic pressure cover balance. One guy goes, the others drop in, that movement that you get when you're in a club team and you work on that all the time,
right?
You know, it's really important, and you only get so many sessions with this team that I thought the energy was good, but perhaps Mexico started baiting us almost even on the press where they were like, let's work it all the way back to Ochoa. Ochoa skips the lines and see if we can bring it down, win the second ball, and then get after them. And it almost worked a couple of times very early on. But if you look at their combination play, that's what they were trying to do. Get us to overcommit, draw you in, and then slot balls through.
Yeah, you're right. And I want to agree with Nick Streeter in the comment that mentioned that we started to find our groove at the end of the first half. What I found to be interesting, I love the swarm press and I love the commitment, as you're saying. Once our communication got a little bit cleaner, then I think we were almost doing the swarm press in a way that made it more effective because we had that balance. If Mexico, because sometimes you do the swarm press and the other team gets a lucky bounce, like Weston McKennie got on his goal. And You still want to be in a position where you can still defend it. You're still prepared almost for the lucky bounce. In the first half, we saw on the chance that Chucky Lozano had, Walker Zimmerman, Miles had already stepped into midfield to cover somebody. He got pulled out of position. Then when Raul Jimenez gets the ball, you have Walker Zimmerman who comes maybe a step too late, and that allows big gaps because DeAndre Yedlin and Anthony Robinson were both dropped behind the center backs, and there's a big swath of space there that Mexico effectively took advantage of. Now, thankfully, Zach Steffen made a good save, and Yedlin got on his horse to put a little bit of pressure there. That got it sorted out, where one center back from that point forward, or at least in the second half, stepped into midfield to cover Raul, and then the other center back would stop or step back and give some cover. Also, I was worried the first half. We did see Anthony and DeAndre Yedlin both bombing forward at the same time. You just can't have that. I love the eagerness to your point that we have players that want to get forward.
You know what that's like, though.
I do.
In locker rooms, the coach is always saying, pick and choose your, like for the fullbacks, pick and choose your moments. And, you know, those types of things, like we can't have you both. If one goes, the other one stays. And, you know, you need to have that balance, so to speak.
Yeah, I just want to give a shout out. We have our producer who's seen all of your comments. Keep those comments coming and keep asking, because we want to answer as many as we can. Obviously, sometimes we get into the flow, as it were. We can't go off on a tangent. That's what we do. It's part of our
charm. Yeah, but it looks like your comments have disappeared. Dez,
don't worry.
He's got a beautiful mind. He sees everything. And he'll make sure that we get those going on there. And also for your social handles when we're going through these likes. So make sure you hit that like button. As a reminder, we're giving away $100 Paramount
Plus. Give them the details, Heath. Give them the details.
Well, yeah, we're giving $100 Paramount Plus subscription gift card. So if and only if we get to 150 likes.
Yeah. We're like at 120 right now. Smash that like button.
Yeah.
So that we have a chance. And you'll be in a raffle and we'll announce it in our Jamaica versus US preview on the next
one. Yeah. I like that. And if we keep going, if we blow past that, we're going to get Dez to maybe he gets in trouble for this, but maybe we got to give away a second if people just
maybe
keep crushing
maybe
that.
We should. If we get to 300, we should consider it.
Yeah. So Jimmy, 3 defeats in 2021. Does it feel like the US is becoming a fortress for US Mexico? Because remember, the U.S. has played Mexico almost always outside of a qualifier at Azteca. The game U.S. always plays Mexico in the U.S. Is it feeling more like a fortress? Question one. Question two. Is Tata Martino in the hot seat now? Look, they're going to cruise to World Cup qualifying. This is his 6th defeat in charge, and he's in like the 30-plus wins and like 7 draws. He's got a great record. But 3 of those are against the U.S. Is his job, do you think, because it's so personal that his job's in jeopardy? Or, you know, and I know we talked to Wiso Vasquez about this stuff, that there's not really another option right now, but do you think it's his, at least his seat is heating up, or is it just sort of like, tough year. We're still Mexico. We're still going to qualify.
Okay. First, this is the first time the U.S. has beaten Mexico 3 times in a calendar year since 1934 or something crazy. Yeah. So
been a while.
Yeah. Put that feather in our cap, right? Yeah. So I'll take that. I think if there's sensible leadership at FMF, the Mexican Federation, you're not firing Tata Martino. But I will say that this one probably hurts the most, because if we look at the Nations League final, they were up 2-1 with 15 minutes left to go. We got a set piece to make it 2-2. We win in penalties, or we win off a Christian Pulisic penalty, but Guardado missed his penalty. You know, I mean, there's a lot of room for Tata to be like, we got a little unlucky, you know?
It's a game of moments.
It is a game of moments. And we got a little unlucky. But after 90 minutes, it was 2-2. Then you go to the Gold Cup final. It was 0-0 after 90 minutes. It wasn't that sexy of a game. It was kind of forgettable. But we end up scoring 3 minutes before penalties. Miles Robinson on another set piece. Again, he could go in there and be like, it's the fine margins. What are you going to do? I don't have my best players out there. Now, tonight, I don't think he actually, especially in the back line, maybe didn't have his best players. But his front six were pretty solid. You know, you have some world-class ability in that front six. And arguably the best front three with Tecatito, Raul Jimenez, and Chucky Lozano. Even though they did create 2 good chances, when the game got a little bit tighter and the U.S. got a little bit more organized after the second half, that's when I think I'd be the most disappointed as leadership of Mexico. Like, where was that creativity, that ability to take over the game when we needed it? Where were our big chances in the second half? They didn't have any until they started to potentially start to drop balls and play with a little bit more urgency. So that would be where I'd be almost a little bit disappointed from a federation standpoint. But for them to fire him now, who are they going to bring in that has?
What about if they lose to Canada? We had a comment in here that he's not in the hot seat unless they lose to Canada. They're going to Edmonton. That's not a fun place to play. And Canada's hot right now.
That's true. We just saw Daniel Pinto. Daniel Pinto had a comment saying, after this window, if Mexico loses to Canada, Mexico could be in 3rd after this window, which is crazy to think about given how well they started. Now, yes, he would be on the hot seat for sure. I feel like anytime you take over a job of that magnitude, especially the Mexican national team, you're already on the hot seat. Even if you haven't done anything, you get the job and people are like, I want him out. He sucks, you know? And that's kind of probably the challenge and the thrill of the job is that you have those types of stakes when you take over. I think if they do lose to Canada, there's still an element of how did the team play? And tonight, I think he had 45 minutes where they created more than enough opportunities to score. And that second 45 minutes is where I think I'd be the most disappointed if I was a Mexican fan. He's definitely on the hot seat, but still, What I like about it is I don't hear any chatter from a player perspective. And you and I know a couple guys behind the scenes that we could get some of that insight. I think they all really buy into what Tata Martino's doing. And I don't think you can always say that about previous managers. There was always some undercurrent of like, this guy's a clown. You know, he's gotten lucky or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So he's got some work to do, of course. You know, you got to build that confidence up again. You don't want to lose to the U.S. like they did, Dos Acero, because we're going to – that's what we do. We're going to rub it in your face until at least until at the end of January when we play in Azteca. But I would say it's going to depend on how they play against Canada. And then if we beat them again in Mexico City, then I think you will probably strongly consider maybe Tata Martino isn't the right guy.
Yeah. Well, when I think about this Mexico side, Jimmy, and let's go back on a little bit of a short little history. For the U.S., is this the most first half, again, I don't think it was poor. But when I go to the Nations League, I go, that's the way I remember the U.S. beating Mexico, right? Mexico dominates. Mexico gets a lot of chances. U.S. fights like hell. U.S. wins game. U.S. more disciplined. Qualify for World Cup type of thing failed in 2018. That's sort of like the way it worked, right? There was a very simple recipe. There was like three ingredients in that recipe to make a beautiful World Cup drink, a cocktail. But this one today, you could start to see a little other glimpses. And when I speak specifically about players, I'm talking about Yunus Musa, who brings another element to the game where, oh, you're going to play that tight to me. All right, poof, I'm gone. See ya, I'm splitting up the middle on you. Weston McKennie has the same thing. Tyler Adams has this fighter mentality. We're starting to see these positional specialists that can solve problems that I don't think we ever had. Whereas before it was like, what, are you a fighter? All right, cool. That's a good step towards this national team, is like that sort of fighting spirit. Do you think the U.S. is making way towards a little bit more of an identity and a little bit more of a level playing field in terms of quality with Mexico? Because I always looked at Mexico as better than us on the U.S. team in terms of player for player. The players that they had when I was in that generation, they had players, you know, they had Giovanni Dos Santos, they had Rafa Marquez, they had guys at Barcelona. We now have players at Barcelona and Juventus and these clubs. Do you think we're leveling in that and if it, even perhaps even surpassing the quality of that we're starting to see come through? Because it felt like in that second half, the U.S. was taking it to them more than I remember the U.S. taking it to Mexico in most games.
I think that surpassing feels a little bit strong. I just think that Mexico got some quality. I think where they lack, and somebody said they lack some speed, and that's where we can take advantage of them at times. But usually they made up for their lack of speed with their tactical acumen, their understanding, their superior, let's say, IQ and tactics. But I think we're closing the gap in that capacity. And it was always going to happen at some point. We were going to have a generation of players that could really go toe-to-toe with Mexico in every single facet of the game. What I find interesting, and I wanted to bring this up on HQ and I forgot, but the first half, when you look at who had more possession, it was us. We had 54% possession. Now, Ian Joy went in there and said it was kind of 50-50, but when you looked at the numbers, 54 to 46 for us in a half where we didn't necessarily look like we owned it and it felt really hectic and we didn't really establish a rhythm or flow is tremendous. Yeah. And I think needs to be spoken about. I don't want that to go quietly in the night, because that really speaks to our confidence, perhaps, that we are maintaining a little bit more possession than we thought that we did. Now, obviously, there were moments in that first half where I was so frustrated, because there, and this is where I think the evolution of the team is, and maybe I'm answering like six of your questions in different ways here.
No. I ask a lot of triple-barreled questions where there's just nowhere to go but start talking.
But this is what I think might be happening in our first halves, if I can put my coaching hat on for a second, that we have guys and we're on the ball, especially when we're eager and have a little bit more energy in the first half, where two or three guys are ready to go and full attack. And then you have two or three guys that are maybe sensing it, that's not the right time to do it. And we just feel a little disjointed with that. And then in the second half, when everybody settles in and we can talk a little bit about what we saw in the first half and work through some of those things, we seem to be a little bit more of a well-oiled machine. We get a little bit more efficient in our movements. So I think that maybe gets brought into the equation. But that is going to be part of our evolution. Can we, as a team, decide when to go and when to slow down? And that's a level of tactical understanding that I don't know if we always had at a consistently, I would say. Yeah. Heath, where even though we were playing with Claudio Reyna and John O'Brien and these incredible guys at maintaining rhythm and being deep line playmakers and really knowing the right pass in every situation, I feel like if we're going to really take those next big steps and start to compete with the biggest of nations on a regular basis, knowing how to establish a flow and a rhythm and knowing when to go collectively and when to drop off and having that collective sense of this isn't the right time. Let's just keep it. Let's catch our breath. Let's make them suffer a little bit. And then conversely, when another team establishes their rhythm, how quickly can we get that back? And I love talking about that because that gets into more of the why. Why are we making these types of decisions? Why are we going now? And can we solve all these problems? You can solve a lot of problems with good team shape. And anyway, you just take it from here because I'm going off on a tangent.
No. I my take on that is that I think this is the most intelligent generation we've ever had because all these kids grew up in professional environments. None of us
did.
These kids have reps. They have hours. They have however you declare somebody an expert at something. These players are inching towards that and in very high level environments, most of them or a lot of them coming through MLS academies, others coming from other academies, but coming through professional environments where they're doing this from a young age. And I'm not saying that's like, you know, I'm not saying single sport from like, I'm not getting into the young age, but I think there is an intelligence to these players. There was times in the game, Jimmy, that I looked at these players going, oh gosh, oh no, he's off balance. I look at Ricardo Pepi almost every time where I'm like, oh man, he's going to lose the ball. He's making a mess of this. And he rolls one back first minute of the game, rolls one back like a little back heel. And then we spring out on a counterattack. Ball comes into him. And very similarly to top strikers, ball comes into his foot. And with the outside of his foot, he just pops it back to a player and gets on with the game. And you're like, oh, that's something different than I've seen before, right? That simplicity of his game, but knowing that, oh, I've got to hold a guy off. I'm just going to lay it off. And those little tiny details that I look at for a number of players, and it was Weston McKennie a couple times, Yunus Musa, where I'm like, oh, don't play that ball. We don't have that range. You know, we can't slot that ball. And no, we don't do that kind of, we don't play that kind of game. And then boom, same Zach Steffen, boom, that slotting that ball through 3-4 players. I'm like, okay, there's something to this group in terms of that quality decision-making and the ability to execute that decision while playing with a very high IQ that I'm really excited about. Obviously so much of it is raw and unharnessed sort of unnurtured potential. But when I see that, I'm like, I don't remember seeing some of those types of things. And real quick, Jimmy, for those of you that are entering into the raffle, you have to give your Instagram or Twitter handle, some sort of social handle, so our producer can put you into the pot for the the giveaway. And a reminder, that is a $100 Paramount Plus subscription gift card that you can get whatever subscription you want with Paramount Plus. That could last, if you got the lightest subscription, that could last you over a year. Others, you know, depending on the premium subscriptions and whatnot, it's pretty great. Just trust me on that. So make sure
we got to get 150 likes collectively. Yeah. We can do it. Smash that like button, make it happen. And then use your Twitter handles, social media handles, whatever you want. Put that in the chat so Dez can mark it. And that way you guys have a chance to win. We'll announce the winner on Monday for our preview show.
Jimmy, our producer said lots of likes, not a lot of social handles. So we need those social handles because we want you guys to be entered into it to make sure that you could potentially win it. Because it sounds
well, we're
right.
Past the 150 mark. So we got the likes now. Now put your Twitter handles or your Instagram handles in the chat right now so we can contact you if you win our raffle. So get after it. Go do it now. Flood the chat with your handles. Yes.
Jimmy.
Yes.
For this upcoming game against Jamaica, and we're going to do a full preview on Sunday where we give away this raffle and announce that. So we're not going to get too deep into it. But McKennie and Miles Robinson suspended for that game against Jamaica. Does that make a big difference to the team, the potential, or do you think that there's enough quality out there regardless?
It does. I think actually Weston McKennie maybe hurts us a little bit more because I think Chris Richards, I like Miles Robinson. He's been our most consistent, I think one of our most consistent players throughout this qualifying campaign. And
continues but not a star.
Not yet. Let's put a caveat, not yet. But Chris Richards can come in and I think have a similar impact on the game. And I think he's going to be relishing the opportunity, knowing he's going to get all 90 minutes. And if Walker Zimmerman ends up being kind of the steady guy in that back line, then it's going to be a fight to see who can be next to Walker or conversely next to Miles Robinson. So there's a big opportunity here for Chris Richards. The Weston McKennie one is interesting because now you get to decide, you have options. You can go with the old Greg Berhalter favorite, Legette, who we love, friend of the show, nice guy, super guy, does the job, good leader, good experience. Or you can go with Abusio, who I think can help kind of dictate the flow of the game, right? And know when to slow it down and speed it up, like I was just talking about. That's an interesting choice. I thought Yunus Musa was fantastic tonight. His running with the ball, breaking the lines with his run. He had a move in the second half. I didn't even know what to say. Little step over, little drop of the shoulder and he was gone to get out of some pressure. I can't believe that kid's only 18. It's ridiculous. And he's so good at holding the ball up under pressure too and drawing that foul to slow everything down. Let us catch our breath, maybe draw a set piece in and around the attacking third of our side. And obviously their defending third. So Yunus Musa, I think, needs to be in there. I could see Busio. I don't know what everybody else thinks. I don't know what you think, Heath. And then really the other decision is, do you start Pulisic or do you keep Brendan Aaronson and allow Pulisic to be the super sub? Maybe that's a Thomas Tuchel decision more than anybody else's, but I'm kind of curious about those three spots in particular. But I think Richards has got Miles Robinson locked up.
I like that. And Daniel Kane says Zimmerman is probably the most underrated just because of MLS career. I mean, you're starting to see the exposure. Yeah, you're starting to see the exposure of that when he left LAFC and just the big hole that they've struggled to fill the void of, obviously some injuries and other things. That's a conversation for another time. But just the value of somebody, sometimes you don't know how good it is until they're gone for a player like that. But listen, everyone, we are going to take a quick break. If you're listening to this in podcast form, we will be right back. If you're watching this on YouTube, stay right here. We're not going anywhere.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
What is going on, everybody? Jimmy, we are back. We've got some more US-Mexico to talk. People are enjoying it. So make sure you send those comments in. We want to get them onto the show and engage with them, talk about them, and keep those likes going up, because if we're lucky, you know, we're going to get Dez to make us have to do two giveaways. Now, Jimmy, let's talk about VAR or the lack thereof, okay? There's some drama on that. Some drama around the Rodriguez-Aaronson incident. We know we've been complaining about the lack of VAR. Now, Jimmy, before we get into that, I do want to say, when you're up 2-0 against Mexico and the 90th minute hits and the fourth official comes out and gives you 4 minutes, that's when I start to like that there's no VAR, because it's not 7, it's not 8, it's not 9, it's not another quarter of an hour that we're seeing VAR add to these games now. We know we got to get through 4 minutes. We're down a man. We're going to scrap this thing out. We're going to survive this. Now, that makes me excited. However, seeing my guy Brendan Aaronson get his eye gouged in front of the world with the exposure that we have now is a huge miss for me. And the U.S., I thought, handled it well. I thought the U.S. stood up for him. Everybody obviously saw it because it got real chippy and got real scrappy. But that was an incident, Jimmy. That was an actual incident. I mean, they talked about curling the fingers into somebody's eye. That's a real thing. What's your take on this?
I think it's embarrassing that VAR isn't implemented in CONCACAF World Cup qualifying. There's way too much at stake not to have another set of eyes that, okay, whatever you think about VAR, but it would have gotten Chaka Rodriguez red carded for sure. As someone who suffered an eye gouge from Roberto Ayala from Argentina in the Copa America, it's not fun. And That was after I tried to get him back because when he tried to elbow me in the ribs, bastard. I'm still bitter with Roberto Ayala eye gouging me. But
yeah, but he's famous. That's kind of cool.
That's kind of cool, I guess. I don't know. I can't see out of this part of my eye, but it's a different conversation. But I do think that if VAR had been around, would Chaka try that stuff? I mean, he's dabbling in the dark arts of shithousery, you know? So it's very CONCACAF of him. So I appreciate him keeping that consistent. And I like that the game gets chippy. I always enjoyed when the games got a little bit chippy, when the emotion raised and who could keep cool and calm despite the heightened tension. And you could see that the game was getting away from Mexico a little bit. And I'm glad we got the win, obviously, to your point. I actually thought we handled it pretty well. Where I thought the referee got it completely wrong is that Zach Steffen comes out of his goal to help protect his player. And I don't know whether to calm it down or escalate. It didn't feel like he was escalating per se, just, you know, standing up for his guy. And the referee gives him a yellow. And then Weston McKennie gets a cheap yellow for doing the same thing. Maybe it was for him pushing Chaka off of Brendan Aaronson. But what else, what do you expect when a guy's getting eye gouged, you know, and getting ridden like a horse? Of course you're going to step up and do something.
Can you stop putting your fingers in my teammate's eye?
So, I mean, you got two guys that are standing up. We get two cheap yellows for two players. And then Chaka Rodriguez, who committed the foul that should have been a red, he gets a yellow too. It's just like, this referee's on something, man. I actually thought he was controlling the game pretty well for a good portion of it. And then he just lost the plot. And then the game just got really out of control. But and then he gave the second yell to Miles, which was unfortunate. You know, maybe he did deserve it, but it just kind of sucked at that point. So I'm kind of bitter at the referee, to be honest.
That's fair. Well, Jimmy, it's time for our favorite segment.
Let's do it.
Welcome to Raising the Bar, presented by Sonos Beam. This segment focuses on the players who raise the bar during the game, taking their game to another level. Jimmy and I will wax poetic about the players who exceeded our expectations in Cincinnati. And yep, you guessed it, raised the bar. So, Jimmy, who are you going with today?
I'm actually going to go.
Should be raise the var, but, you know.
Wasn't going with var, but I like that. Yeah. I'm going to go with Timothy Weah. I thought he was excellent tonight. I know that he was a little quiet in the first half, given how well he played in the second half, but that seems to be a team trend. So I'm not going to hold it against him personally. He did get off a pretty good shot, I thought, in the first half, kind of a signal of intent that, hey, you know, I'm going to do something tonight. And I like that positivity and that confidence. I think that he took another step towards being more consistent. Now, I'm going to use this as an example. Anthony Robinson, a couple months ago, wasn't our out-and-out left back. Right. It was Sergiño Dest was preferred over him, a right footer on the left side, because the confidence in Anthony Robinson wasn't great. Anthony Robinson has that one game where you're like, we should stick with him because there's enough there that I think if we stick with him, he'll get that confidence and can build on those appearances. Right. He can build on what he did before. We're starting to see that with Miles Robinson as well. And now they're kind of locked in as those guys. And that's great.
Is he still your lock? Is Robinson still your lock at left back?
He is. Yes.
Okay.
And then you have, until Joe Scally gets a chance, maybe that'll add some competition. But I like Anthony there, even though at times, you know, on that Tecatito one, his positioning was a little, we don't have to.
He looked tired today to me.
Maybe. But I still like his game overall. Yeah. And I like left-footed players on the left side of the field. So let me just say it like that. And
all right, he doesn't get into our Raising the Bar segment.
He's not the raising with the bar. Timo Weah. I'm going with Timo Weah, though. But I'm using Anthony as an example because if you give some of these guys a proper run out, if you give them three or four games in a row, I think we're going to see, even with Brendan Aaronson, like this is what he's capable of when we give him a little bit of confidence and know that he's not being held to a standard, that he's not, that if he makes one mistake, he's going to sit on the bench for three games. You know, I giving that to Timothy Weah, I think, is super important. And I know that maybe he was a bit of a surprise starter for some. I didn't think it was a surprise at all. And I thought that he leveled up, especially in the second half. They definitely had a conversation in some capacity about just taking your guy 1v1 when you have the opportunity. And you don't need to beat him. You just have to create enough space to get a cross off.
Very traditional style winger. You only need the width of a ball space to get around the first foot and then to beat a few players. It's very, very old school direct winger. Like, yeah, he's not out on the touchline, but he's dribble, 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 and then get your little gap and whip it in as hard as you can.
I agree with you. And I love that because how many meaningful crosses did he have in the second half? 5, 6, 7 led
first
to a
half
goal.
He had a few also, like where he just goes, takes his few touches, gets down to the touchline, and then just bangs it, which is awesome.
And here's the thing that everybody needs to think about when that happens. if everybody's on the same page with your wingers and you know that they're going to take one or one touch and hit the ball in, you can make your timed runs. You can support the play in the box in a meaningful way. Nobody, like everybody's probably played some pickup, right? And you got that one guy who's taking like 70 touches. You're like, just cross the ball in already, man.
Well, not only that, Jimmy, but the defenders get to set their feet if you take enough touches, right? Then they get into position, body length, like body positioning, everything like that. It gets harder to beat. Now you get them off balance, make the game predictable for your attackers. That's what you're saying.
100%. And I think we saw that today, that the timing of our runs, and then there was just a commitment in the second half to get more numbers in the box. And that led to Weston McKennie very early on in the second half, getting a good shot. The Memo Ochoa pushed over the bar. And that was, again, another signal of intent. I think Timmy Weah is really pushing hard. And it's going to be interesting to see, and I should have finished that sentence, of being a regular. Mm-hmm. But when Gio Reyna comes back and is healthy again, and Pulisic's going to come back and be healthy, how do you maintain that consistency with those players that have done so well to help us get to this point and obviously are doing well collectively and individually? So I thought raising the bar wise, Timo Weah was my guy today. I thought he was fantastic.
Okay. That's great. Oh, Dilly says, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I completely agree with Jimmy.
Why are you laughing? Do that.
By the way, we've had two Rockies comment on the show tonight. So Rocky, the name Rocky is, that's, you know, I know one Rocky. I think it was Rocky Martin. But like the rest of them, there's a lot of Rockies out there. But Jimmy, for me, I'm going to go with Zach Steffen. I would love to go with Timo Weah as well.
Nice shout. Nice shout.
I started to feel a little hurt when you were talking about just give these guys a chance and see how they, because Zach Steffen doesn't play at his club. You know, he plays sparingly, I guess is the right way to put it. Just signed a brand new 5-6 year deal. I'm sure, you know, he's in the cash money on that deal, but I want to see him playing games, and he's still young enough where, you know, goalkeepers age differently than field players do. But in this game, it's hard to simulate sharpness in training. And you and I both know that, right? If you're not, you train the way you play and, but you need the games. You need the games to know the speed of the timing, the decision-making. Your brain needs to be able to tell you, go here, go out for a punch, make a save. Obviously I'm talking about goalkeepers in this context,
but
the timing of the game is hard to replicate and hard to simulate. And he stepped up big and he had the couple saves that we needed to keep it level at half. And then the team took over from there. And not only that, but I go back to that comment you said where he slotted that ball through three or four players in a tight space. And I'm like, this is unbelievable. And it's that kind of thing where you go, wow, there's another level to this guy. There is this guy has sees the game differently than any goalkeeper we've ever had in terms of the ball at his feet, his distribution, and his confidence in distribution. It's not like this, I'm going to try it once, and if it doesn't, I'm just going to lump everything long. That's his game. And I think he rose to the challenge in that context. I think it's a challenge anytime you have to step into a big game and you're not playing regularly. I'm sure you've done that, whether coming back from an injury in your career. I know that you are a career starter most of the time at your club level, but for me, same thing. Coming into moments where you haven't played, even in a couple of weeks, you go, you're a little bit off, you know, and you have to tap into something different than having just played a few days earlier.
Right,
and for him to step up and lead this team gives me the confidence that we have a sure number one at this point. Now, making saves and all that, we saw Matt Turner all kind of for the last months making big saves like that, keeping the U.S., and I don't want to overlook that. But tonight, Zach Steffen is the top for me. Zach Steffen is my player that's raising the bar. Now, Jimmy.
Yes.
You know I just moved into a new house, right?
I didn't, but it looks fantastic, or at least the one wall I can see.
Well, you can only see this wall now, which is the studio space. But I will tell you this, my house, pre-wired smart home, right? I got lucky. It's pre-wired for everything that I want.
Flex
someday,
of the day, everybody. Flex.
So nice, yeah, flex of the day. And it's built for someday. I want to be the envy of all the rival dads in my neighborhood. But the problem is now, Jimmy, I've got three kids. And so it's all just pre-wired, right? It was pre-wired up until recently. And we're like, should we get a sound bar? Should we not? What should we do? We got three kids. When they're sleeping, I don't want to wake them up. So we waited. And the sound was terrible in the house. You know, the house was not made for the TV that I had and all that sort of stuff. So ended up getting a Sonos Beam. And I was very, very wrong, Jimmy. And here's why. The Sonos Beam has panoramic sound, which is fantastic. It has speech enhancement. So when the kids are going crazy around the house, I just kind of put on speech enhancement and I can listen to sports and know what's going on. It's also got night mode, Jimmy, which means when the kids are sleeping or my wife goes to sleep or whatever, I can still enjoy the sound, the quality, all of that stuff without having to sacrifice the immersive experience, so to speak. And the best part is, you don't have to piecemeal the whole speaker system together. When I got the Sonos Beam, it's just changed everything for me. Not only that, it's a new house, like I mentioned, Jimmy. I've got this beautiful piece of artwork that is the Sonos Beam. And you know, for me, I'm a very simple man, but for my wife, she's like, hey, it's got to fit with the room. And guess what, Jimmy? It does. It's wall mounted. It looks beautiful, but the sound that comes out of it is incredible. And by the way, it's all connected to Wi-Fi. So you start with one speaker and then you can build from there. And then they, because of the Wi-Fi, you can connect them all throughout the house and listen to whatever you want. Watch it.
I want one of these. Keep going. I love this.
Yeah. It's amazing. So I have all of these different things. The sound of it is so crisp, so clear. When I get to the weekends, we bump that music. We have a park behind the house. People dance over on that side of the park. You know, the neighbors haven't complained yet, but we seem
it
like
it brings cool. people together. Brings people together. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Exactly. And listen, people think that we're really cool in the neighborhood because we've got really good sound. Now, Jimmy, I told you, I want to do this all throughout the house. So if you have a plug for me to get that Sonos set up, obviously works. I listen to music on it. I watch movies. But when you can get that whole beautiful sound going, it's an incredible thing. And for those of you that are interested in hearing more, make sure you go to Sonos.com. You can learn all about it. The Sonos Beam has been an incredible experience for me. I love it. I don't regret it one bit. My kids are still sleeping great because it's got all these modes that you can go into to make sure that you can enjoy the experience without sacrificing the quality of life within the house.
Well done.
You like that, Jimmy?
Yeah. I do. It's fantastic. Thanks, man. Makes me want to go marry a Sonos Beam right now. It sounds like a wonderful addition to the family.
Well, listen, let's talk about everything else that's going on in the Ocho, the octagonal, what we've going on. So Honduras loses to Panama. Jimmy, this was a crazy one, right? Honduras go up 2-0.
At home, I was excited.
I was dancing. I was, you know, no disrespect to Panama, but for the U.S.'s sake, it's good for Panama to have lost this one. They come back, score crazy goals, and they win 3-2 on the road in San Pedro Sula. What was your takeaway from this one? And do you think Panama are really making a case for a top three or at least a contention of this? Because they don't seem to want to go easy.
No, and we talked about Panama and their quality and their manager who's got them really well organized, Thomas Christensen, and their number 10, Barcenas, who we're both big fans of. I'm just more disappointed in Honduras. You're up 2-0 at home. And they were up 1-0 against us at halftime and gave up 4 goals. I don't know what's going on with the team. They're now at the bottom of the table with 3 points. Had they won this, they would have gone up to 6 and they would have held Panama to 8. Everything would have been up in the air for that.
I was so happy when I saw it too, when it was
chaos
live. When it was on the live table, I was like, 6 points, this is great. You're going nowhere, but we're getting a benefit out of this.
Yeah, that's true. From a U.S. perspective, Mexico perspective, Canada perspective, it would have been nice for Honduras to see that one out and create that little bit of a gap for the top three. But Panama's hanging around, and I think we could see they were going to be difficult to get through. They've created a little bit of a gap for that 4th spot as well. This big game, what actually makes me nervous is that now there's a real hunger from Costa Rica and Jamaica and El Salvador all sitting at 6. Like, they need to get points to stay close to Panama. They need Panama to drop something moving forward. And because we go to Kingston to play Jamaica, who happened to be one of these three teams, that gives me a little cause for concern. And also on top of this, Jamaica's got to be kicking themselves because Mikel Antonio scored a world-class goal, by the way. If you're going to go watch any highlights, go watch his goal against El Salvador. But they gave up a goal in the 89th minute, which has got to be heartbreaking because they had a chance to get up to 8 points. And now
Alex Roldan, MLSer, brother of Christian Roldan.
Yeah, nice header in the 89th minute to tie it up 1-1. El Salvador is very tough at home, so that would have been a good result for Jamaica in particular to have 2 away games, Honduras and then in El Salvador, to get full 6 points out of those 2 games. They got 4, which is still respectable, but this Jamaica team is starting to find their space a little bit, so it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. But that there's a little gap now between the haves and the have-nots, and those have-nots are going to be pretty desperate here in these next couple games, and we happen to play one of them in the next one, so it's going to be pretty tough.
I could be wrong about this, but I'm pretty sure Alphonso Davies played up top tonight for Canada.
Yeah, I haven't seen too much. I saw their goal, but I didn't get to see too much of the game because I was so heavily focused on the U.S. beating Mexico 2-0. Yeah. Let's go, boys.
I will say this. So nobody misunderstands us. We are not writing off Panama whatsoever.
No,
right?
100%.
And they're continuing to show that they're going to be the thorn in the sides of the U.S. and Mexico, who are expected to be in the top three. And then Canada, who's emerged, right? And we just had a comment here from Colby. saying that a full strength Jamaica would be a top three team as well. That's the hard part. You know, you get a few games behind this, but to give up a 90th minute, you've kind of got most of your players in at this point. It's tough to find a rhythm with those players because players are just names on paper, no matter what the club that they play at, until you can find that cohesion. I think Jamaica's really struggled to get all those players in consistently, obviously, because we saw before they couldn't go to certain countries that were players that were playing in the UK, which is difficult, but we'll see. This game against the US for Jamaica is going to be a tough task, especially when you think about that Mikel Antonio, Leon Bailey, you think about the speed. But again, they're vulnerable in transition, and I think the U.S. matches up well against their back line. Again, we're going to do a full preview on that soon, so make sure you guys stay tuned in. And also, make sure you have the notifications on, because when we do go live or when we do create this content, we want to make sure that, you know, it's basically like us knocking on your door to say, hey, we're going to go do this. Come join us and get in on the conversation and throw those comments in just like we're doing right now. Jimmy, is there any sleepers in this group, or do you think we've pretty much found out who our four are? I mean, Jamaica, is Costa Rica still have a chance for you there? I mean, where are you at in terms of, is there anybody that has any hope left of, or are we a four horse race looking for three guaranteed spots?
I think Jamaica are still in there with a shout for sure. And obviously I'm curious to see how they're going to perform against the US next week on Tuesday. And make sure you're here for our preview and for everything else we're doing live. Turn on your notifications, as he says. Hit that subscribe button too. I think Costa Rica's got to be gutted a little bit. They were outpossessed like 60-40 tonight in Canada. No Keylor Navas. And if you watch the goal that Canada score, it's a hopeful long ball or a free kick into the box. Goalkeeper spills it and Canada scores from there. Keylor Navas, I don't think, drops that ball. The second goal that we scored against Costa Rica was a goalkeeper error, in my humble opinion. Should have made the save. We'll take it, of course, but I don't know if Costa Rica is going to have enough. I think they're going to run out of gas. Honduras is dead for me. El Salvador, they go to play against Panama in Panama, the next one. Doesn't look good, given that Panama just got that big, big result coming back from 2-2 to win 3-2. I think they're going to want to see out that momentum against one of the weaker teams on paper in the CONCACAF region, which could really separate them. So I expect Panama to get another 3 points. That puts them on 14. And then it's going to get really tricky. And if we can beat Jamaica, so if Panama beats El Salvador and we beat Jamaica, I think we have our top four, and then it's just a matter of where everybody finishes.
Yeah, when I look at that, it's funny because I thought that, you know, 1.5 points on 14 games would be, I don't know what that number is, but I think it was somewhere around 19 points would qualify. Maybe it was 21 points. But now it might be different, because if you separate this early, if you separate after this game, it's going to go longer, and you're going to continue to have this separation where you have Panama, Canada, US, and Mexico all taking points off of the lower teams.
Right.
And then you actually start to look back at a US, Mexico, and then Mexico against the US, and actually need those points to create those gaps. And fortunately for the US, they got those 3 points, but they didn't get much help elsewhere in today's matches. Looking at the game on Tuesday, Jimmy, and not specifically just the U.S. against Jamaica, but we're talking about Mexico against Canada. I mean, is there anything from those? Elliot Stevens is saying that he didn't like Herdman's rotations, kept Davies and Larea on the left and Tejon on the right. No need to, or he's saying keep them. Keep Davies and Larea on the left and Tejon on the right. No need to mess with that. Yeah, I mean.
Well, here's the issue with that, Elliot. I'm just going to say that you didn't like the rotations, but they're still getting rewarded for those rotations. So you might not like John Herdman's tactics at times, but they still are undefeated. They're the only undefeated team left in CONCACAF. And you have to give credit where credit's due. Maybe they didn't flow and didn't have the rhythm as much tonight, but it seems like for the most part, John Herdman has been pushing all the right buttons. He's got a quality squad. I'm actually really excited for Canada to qualify for the first World Cup since 86. I think it's a big deal. I find it awesome that Alphonso Davies is playing up top, and I just think that speaks to his versatility, that he can be dangerous in so many different positions around the field. And yeah, I really like Canada right now. They got a big test though. Their next game is against Mexico in Edmonton, where they just played tonight against Costa Rica. It's going to be a tough test, and it's a must win now in some ways for Mexico, because can they really go through one qualifying window with two losses to their two biggest rivals right now? That's a big question, and something we did address a little bit earlier about Tata Martino being on the hot seat. I think it depends on how they play. I could see another draw there, especially because Canada went down to Estadio Azteca and got a draw in Mexico City. I feel like Mexico owe them a little bit, but it's going to be freezing cold. So we'll see if the Mexican national team can handle that, because it was a little cold in Cincinnati as well. And they didn't seem, they got a little tired there at the end, I think.
Yeah, and interestingly enough for this Canada side, Jimmy, when I look at the players they put on the field, right, Marc-Anthony Kay is a part-time starter in the Canadian national team at the moment. Eustachio is a starter and a game-changer for them. But then you look at Tejon Buchanan. You know, you got Kyle Larin right now coming off the bench. He's got the most goals of anyone in CONCACAF, I think, in over the calendar year, including the last rounds for the national team. And then, you know, off the bench, Jonathan Osorio came in for Alfonso Davies. Atiba Hutchinson, another experienced player, probably the most experienced player of anybody, even, I would guess, maybe even, in, I mean, maybe Keylor Navas and a few others in Mexico, but like one of the most experienced players in CONCACAF right now, still playing at a high level. They've just got a lot of depth that I it's hard for me to believe that two or three injuries or a dip in form or some of your players aren't playing, that they don't have the tools to qualify, which is why, you know, we're obviously making more of a statement that they're going to qualify. And then, by the way, we're playing right into the seasonal. Caleb's talking about this exactly. The seasonal advantages of Canada. We haven't seen Canada in a final round of World Cup qualifying. And again, I don't remember the scheduling and timing, but you would generally, we saw the snow game in Denver and things like that. Mm-hmm. It was 1 degree Celsius tonight, but it felt a lot colder, let alone next week when it's -7. That, I mean, you know what it's like, Jimmy. You're it stings, it burns. Would you rather play? Actually, here's a good question. Would you rather play in all like super hot or super cold?
I prefer super cold, to be honest. It's funny because I would love to play super hot only because I know the field will be in a decent condition more often than not, right? Well, it can't be on turf because then like your feet will melt. But if you're playing on grass, I'd want to go super hot. But if you can promise me on a super, if it's super cold out, that the field will still be okay and play pretty straight, I'd rather go super cold, frankly. Yeah. But I don't know, dude. I'm got Scandinavian blood in my veins, so I'm probably drawn to the cold a little bit. But
I feel like cold, you can you get the cold, you get the stinging, the burning of the toes and the hands, but you can keep going. Whereas heat depletes you differently, where you have a limited amount of resources to use. At least for me, I remember those hot games of just being like, "Oh yeah, it's halftime. Like I'm done. There's nothing left." But one of the criticisms, Jimmy, and not criticisms, but one of the things that is talked about widely in Major League Soccer is the advantages that happen because of all the climates that we have here. Right? You go into the UK and you're like, "Oh, it's more rainy in Newcastle, but it's still rainy in London." Right?
Yeah. Right.
But in MLS, you have altitude in Denver, and you have altitude in Salt Lake, and you have cold, dreary weather in Canada. You have seasonal changes happening. You know, you go down to the south and you play a day game. It's miserable. You're seeing that now. We always talk about that when you go down to Central America, the humidity and the heat and the pitch and all these things, where like Canada's a new element that people are going to have to deal with coming through the January and February matches, and I think probably March. I'm not sure which of those they have home games. But now finishing this one off for Mexico, they've got to do it. And it is, I know it's just November, but it's cold there.
Yeah. It is an advantage, as you say, that because we actually haven't thought about Canada in the last phase of qualifying for a number of years, decades, it is to their advantage that they get to play in these circumstances and take advantage of it, and fair play to them. And on top of that, they actually have a team that's very solid. I mean, I guess we could argue when I would go down, I don't know, were you down there when we qualified for the World Cup in San Pedro Sula?
No, I wasn't.
Oh my God. I walked like 10 feet and it was just like drenched in sweat. I mean, the humidity was crazy. And so I think that those countries have to take advantages where they can, and you know, they'll play that game was like 10 at night because it just was insufferable to play it at any other time. But they've done day games before against the US, and it makes it hard. You just can't breathe, and it's, yeah. So I have no problem with it. I think that's part of it. That's part of the game. That's part of World Cup qualifying. And if you have a home field advantage, you should take it.
I like that. Jimmy, Should we start wrapping this up for the evening? We've kept people long enough. It's getting late.
I want to go celebrate. Yes.
It's a dos acero. It's a tres acero on the year against Mexico. A wonderful, wonderful evening where we got to see more glimpses of the U.S. than I think we did earlier on in the summer, where we were focusing more on like the fight. We saw a little bit more of the star mentality come out of these guys. What are your final thoughts?
My final thoughts are that I am very excited about the performance, mainly because we found a way to rectify what wasn't working in the first half and went out and had success and did it consistently. It wasn't like we got that lucky set piece to get a goal or whatever. Like, we had a plan and it was working. We stuck to it. The players identified some weaknesses and went for the jugular in some ways, right? We didn't sit back, or we created chance after chance after chance in the second half. And I want us to bottle that up and use it to the start of the first half against Jamaica. So hopefully we can build off of that. But ultimately, a fantastic performance from the boys. I think we haven't actually mentioned him too much, but I think Greg Berhalter deserves a lot of credit for getting the guys to play at the level that they're playing at, and obviously making some tough choices about who's coming in and who's not, who's starting and who's not. And right now, he's been pushing all the right buttons, so long may that continue. I want to give a shout-out to Canada, the only undefeated team still in CONCACAF. In Mexico, that's going to be a great game in the next window. And then I'm really excited. Panama, well done on coming back from 2-2 in Honduras to win 3-2. But yeah, another great day of CONCACAF. CONCACAF does what it does, which is make it crazy and chaotic, as always. And I'm actually going to go get a few drinks and celebrate with my Sonos Beam. Hopefully that's okay with everybody.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well said, Jimmy. Everyone is forging their own path. It's crazy to think that there's a Jimmy and a Heath somewhere in Panama right now talking about the success of their team. And just a reminder, we have loads more content in store for you throughout the November window and beyond. So make sure you follow or subscribe to K Golasso Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at K Golasso Pod, and make sure to subscribe to the K Golasso channel on YouTube. As a reminder, Sunday we have our preview for Jamaica against the U.S. We talk about the other games as well. Monday is the U.S. Men's National Team Hour, and that's every Monday live at 4:15 p.m. Eastern time. And then on Tuesday, Jamaica versus U.S. live recap. And then, oh, wow, we have more? Jeez Louise.
Yeah, on Sunday, we're doing our Jamaica-U.S. preview. That's this Sunday, not the following Sunday.
Yes,
be on the lookout, everybody. It's just content after content. It's free.
Jimmy,
there's more.
Then we have a Wednesday. We'll do our November window debrief live at 5 p.m. We're going to talk about this whole window. Friday, weekend previews with betting tips. Sunday, live weekend recap at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So Jimmy and I, as well as others, we'll be coming back to you guys. Make sure you're subscribed and tune in. Get your notifications.
Hit that bell. Get that like.
And by the way, you still have a few seconds left. Maybe after this, you can still throw in your social media handles so that we can make Dez, our producer's life, miserable having to sift through all those, put them all into one pool, pull out a random name, and then give away that $100 gift card for the Paramount Plus subscription. And if you guys like that, let us know, and we'll try to do more of these giveaways for you guys, because it's fun to engage with you guys. And thank you so much from Jimmy, Conrad, and I. We will see you guys on Sunday.
USA, 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 USA!
Every sport has their big, juicy controversy. Boxing has the Mike Tyson ear bite. Cycling has Lance Armstrong. Baseball has its steroid era. Curling has Broomgate. It's a story of broken relationships, houses divided, corporate rivalry, and a performance-enhancing broom.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
Broomgate, available now.